Welcome to your chapter over types of health policies. Most of us are used to like a major medical policy where you have one policy that covers everything. Now we're going to talk about major medical in a moment, but first we need to talk about some basic medical expense policies. I'm going to talk about two policies here. Think of these policies as like a supplemental policy, like an Aflac type policy. Something that you would have in conjunction with a major medical policy. By itself, not really going to do you a whole lot of good, but in conjunction with major medical, it could be very useful. So once again, there's going to be two of them that we will talk about. Let me talk about some of the characteristics real quick, though, that you're going to need to know on these on this basic medical insurance policies. First, these policies provide what's known as first dollar coverage. This term, first dollar coverage, you will need to know for your test. All it means is there's no deductible. They start paying from day one. So first dollar coverage means no deductible. Now, all of these policies, since they are limited policies, limited benefit policies, they have limited protection. So most of the time, they have very low dollar limits. Once again, they're not designed to last very long. By themselves, not going to do you a whole lot of good. So now let's look at each one of the policies that I want to talk about. First is a basic hospital expense policy. Another name for that is a hospital indemnity policy. The word indemnity or indemnify means to make whole again. When you purchase a basic hospital expense policy, once again, it provides first dollar coverage, which means no deductible, starts paying from day one. Now, it is a hospital expense policy, so you have to be confined to a hospital. It will pay a specified amount per day for your room and board while you're confined to the hospital. Now, this policy pays you. It does not pay the hospital or the doctors. This is money that's coming to you. But it's a specified dollar amount per day, unrelated to any of the other expenses you're incurring in the hospital, and does have a limited number of days that it will pay. So once again, not designed to last very long. Your next one is a basic surgical expense policy. Obviously, based on the name, it's going to pay for surgeries, so cost of surgeon services, including the anesthesiologist operating room when not covered as a miscellaneous item. There's some terminology here that I want you to be familiar with. First, they use what's called a surgical schedule. The surgical schedule will list procedures that are covered under that policy. If your procedure's not listed on their surgical schedule, then it is not going to be covered. Next, they use what's called a relative value approach. What that means is that each procedure on that surgical schedule is going to have points assigned to it. The number of points assigned to any given procedure will be relative to a number of points assigned to a maximum benefit. So think of it like this. Think on the surgical schedule that the most severe complicated surgery is going to be at the top. And let's say it's open heart surgery. Well, then every procedure below that gets a little less severe, a little less severe, a little less severe. So let's say open heart surgery has 1,000 points assigned to it. Well, every procedure below open heart surgery is going to have points assigned to it, but the number of points assigned to any procedure below that will be relative to the number of points assigned to that maximum benefit of open heart surgery. Okay? Next, there is a conversion factor, and the words in your book are important. The conversion factor represents the total amount payable per point. So let me just kind of give you a quick thing here on this. So let's say you had open heart surgery at the top and it had 1,000 points assigned to it. And let's say they use a conversion factor of 10. So open heart surgery, 1,000 points, multiply that times 10, it means it would pay you $10,000 for open heart surgery. Once again, this is money coming to you. It's not going to the facility. Now let's look at that. Open heart, you have to have open heart surgery. 1,000 points assigned to it, gonna pay you 10 grand. Is that gonna be enough to cover open heart surgery? Well, obviously not. That amount of money barely gonna get you in the hospital these days. Once again, that's why these are supplemental type policies. and they're not really good for everyday needs, but in conjunction with a major medical policy, they could be very useful. Okay, so those are your two basic policies that I like to talk about for your test. Now let's contrast that to major medical. Now, major medical, you have one policy that covers everything, except for those things that are specifically excluded. Every policy has exclusions. We'll talk about those later on. Now, there are some moving pieces to a major medical policy. First, there is a deductible. The deductible is the amount you pay before there's any cost sharing with the insurer. So these do not provide first dollar coverage. You've got to pay a deductible first. Next, there's coinsurance, which is a percentage of cost sharing. Major medical policies have a stop loss feature, which is where you quit paying and the insurance company takes over 100%. And then it used to be they had a maximum benefit of, say, like $1 million or $2 million. Well, one good thing about the Affordable Care Act now is that major medical policies are unlimited on their coverage. So you adjust any one of these things, especially the deductible, the coinsurance, or stop loss, that will affect the premium or the amount of money that you are paying for that policy. So first, major medical, more comprehensive than basic policies. The deductible, the amount the insured pays before any cost sharing. Deductible will go anywhere from $500, $1,000, $2,500, or $6,000. Thank you, Affordable Care Act. Now, after you have met your deductible, then comes the coinsurance, which is the percentage of cost sharing. That's where you get your 80-20, 70-30, 90-10, and 50-50, for instance. So after you've met your deductible, and this is important for your test if you're unclear on how this all works. First, you've met your deductible. Then, let's say you have 80-20 on your coinsurance, which means the insurance company is going to pick up 80% of your expenses after the deductible. You are going to have to only pay 20% after the deductible. So the insurance company is the number on the left. You are the number on the right as far as the percentage of expenses that are paid after the deductible has been met. Next, there is a stop loss feature. That's where you've reached your out-of-pocket max and are no longer billed for your medical expenses, which means the insurance company takes over 100% after the stop loss has been reached. And like I said a minute ago, major medical policies are now unlimited on their coverage. They don't ever quit paying. And they provide what's known as blanket coverage, which means you only have one policy that covers everything. You don't have to have a whole bunch of separate policies. One other thing I want to go ahead and throw in here about your health policies is because of the Affordable Care Act, the dependent child age limit has been raised, and now dependent children can stay on their parents' plan up to age 26. Okay, so dependent children stay on their parents' plan up to 26, or even after 26 if they're still dependent upon somebody for support. We'll talk about that later. There are supplementary major medical policies. A supplementary major medical policy, all that means is that once your basic policy runs out, then you could have a supplementary major medical policy that would kick in. The one test question you might have about supplementary major medical policies is that there's a special deductible that would have to get satisfied, and they call it a corridor deductible. And it must be satisfied before those major medical benefits will kick in. All right, now we're going to go into some different plans. I've got three of them here, and I'm going to tell you the words associated with each one. Let me go ahead and throw in here that your test is very specific on where these words are compartmentalized as far as your HMOs, your PPOs, and your POS plans. Remember, the test world is different than the real world. Now, some of you might, as we go through this, go, well, my plan doesn't work that way. Well, guess what? On the test, it doesn't. Okay, so the test is completely different. So I'll really point out some things that you need to know specifically through here. First, let's talk about health maintenance organizations, or HMOs. HMOs are all about preventive care. They encourage you to stay healthy through regular immunizations and checkups. They want to catch stuff early. All three of the plans, HMOs, PPOs, and POS plans, they are all called managed care plans. They're helping to manage your care. The whole purpose behind managed care is so that they can control their cost. Make sure you know that for your test. Managed care plans are all about the insurance company controlling their cost. Now, HMOs will provide their benefits in the form of services as opposed to reimbursement of the service of the doctor or hospital. Those doctors are just providing a service. I'll talk more about that as we go through our different pieces here. HMOs are all about specific geographic areas. There are pockets of HMOs throughout the state. You must live within their specific geographic area to get service from the HMO. If you move outside of the area, that would be a reason for them to drop you. HMOs have a limited choice of providers. It's actually the most limited choice of providers between the three different plans we talk about. You must pick from doctors and hospitals on their list. Now, here's something that is test specific. A co-payment is a specific part of the cost of care. That's your $10, $20, $25, $30 co-payment that you pay every time you go to the doctor. So that is specific to HMOs for your test. The doctors within an HMO, let's first say you're gonna get to pick your doctor from their list of providers. Your doctor becomes your primary care physician. Now, anytime the need arises for medical care, you can't just go see any doctor on the list. You must go through your primary care physician and get a referral. This is called the gatekeeper concept. You need to know the gatekeeper concept. The whole purpose of the gatekeeper, apologize there, whole purpose of the gatekeeper is to keep down cost of high-priced specialist. That is the whole purpose of your gatekeeper. HMOs operate on what's called a capitated basis or a prepaid basis. What that means is the doctors within the HMO get paid a set fee for each member of the HMO. Whether that member sees the doctor or not, that doctor is going to make the same amount of money. And once again, this gets back to HMOs provide their benefits in the form of services as opposed to reimbursement of the service of the doctor or hospital. Now, HMOs, remember, they're all about specific geographic areas. Got to live within their specific geographic area to get service. However, you do need to know for your test, it's very important that HMOs must provide both emergency care and inpatient hospital care in or out of the service area. So if you have to be traveling across the state, you're outside of your service area and you get in a wreck and you have to go to the emergency room, your HMO has to cover you. Even if you get hospitalized, your HMO must cover you. Now, they're going to want to get you back to the service area as soon as possible, but HMOs must provide both emergency care and inpatient hospital care in or out of the service area. All right, that is your HMO compartment of words. Now, let's look at PPOs, preferred provider organizations. Now, PPOs, once again, are also called managed care plans. Now, PPOs differ from HMOs in that PPOs are called fee-for-service organizations. The doctors are getting paid a fee for the service they are providing. So, fee-for-service organizations. So PPOs are going to be about reimbursement. Okay, remember, HMOs are all about providing their benefits in the form of services, where PPOs are all about reimbursement of the service of the doctor or hospital. Now, PPOs also differ from HMOs. That PPOs have a broader choice of providers. You still have a list of providers, but it is going to be a broader choice than you would have in an HMO. Here is test specific once again. Deductibles and coinsurance are a specific part of the cost of care within a PPO. And that is test specific for your test. Now, PPOs also differ from HMOs in that a PPO, you can go see any doctor on the list anytime the need arises for medical care. Okay? So you could pick a different doctor every day of the week. Now, on both PPOs and HMOs, let's say your favorite doctor is not on their list of providers, but you still want to see your favorite doctor outside of the list. What would you think would happen? Well, what's going to happen is obviously you're going to pay more, or your benefits are going to go down. So if you have a test question about somebody going outside of the network, look for paying more or benefits going down. All right, that's all I wanted on PPOs. Now let's look at a point of service plan, a POS plan. A point of service plan is merely a combination of an HMO and a PPO. So let me give you the characteristics for each. First, the HMO part. First, the doctors are paid on a capitated basis. Once again, they get paid a set fee for each member of the POS network. Next, you as a member would get to pick your primary care physician from their list of providers. But here's the PPO part. Even though you have a primary care physician, you can go see any doctor on the list anytime the need arises for medical care. So your primary care physician is not considered to be a gatekeeper. They are just your primary care physician, but you do not have to get a referral to see another doctor on the list. Now, let's say your favorite doctor is not on their list. You want to go see your favorite doctor outside of the network. All right, so here's what's going to happen. Number one, you're going to pay more, either through your copay, coinsurance, or deductible. And number two, and here's the key, the doctor you go see outside of the network will get paid a fee for the service they provide you. Okay, so for a test question, it's going to ask, how's a doctor compensated outside of a POS network? Just look for fee for service, and you will answer your question correctly. All right, next, let's look at some different ways to help you save for your qualified health expenses. I'm just going to talk about three of these, FSA, HRA, and HSA. So first, let's look at an FSA, a flexible spending account. A flex spending account is a form of a cafeteria plan. All that means is that you get to pick and choose what benefits you want from within the flex spending account. For testing purposes, there are two types of flex spending accounts. First, there is a healthcare account to help you save for your qualified healthcare expenses. Then there's a dependent care account to help you pay for dependent care expenses. You get to choose, do I want the healthcare account? Do I want the dependent care account? Or do I want them both? That's why it's called a cafeteria plan. Now, the IRS has set limits to how much money can go into each one of these accounts. You do not have to know the limits because they change every year. However, you do need to know if it comes down to the end of the year, any funds in your flex spending account, if you haven't used it, you lost it. So the flex spending account rule is used it or lost it. The money will not carry over. Now, on any of the other plans, the money can carry over each year and continue to accumulate, but not on a flex spending account. Now, it is pre-tax dollars that go into a flex spending account, so it does lower your taxable income for the year. Next, we have a health reimbursement account, or HRA. A health reimbursement account consists of funds set aside by an employer to reimburse an employee for their qualified medical expenses. It is the employer's money, so since it's the employer's money, the employer gets to set eligibility requirements, who can participate, full-time employees, part-time employees, or both. And they also get to set contribution limits, how much money can be set aside. It's their money, so they get to decide that. The benefit of that is it allows companies of all sizes to offer this type of benefit. So small employers can compete with larger employers as far as the benefits they provide. Next is a health savings account, or HSA. A health savings account consists of funds set aside by an employer and an employee, so it could be both of their monies that's getting set aside. Now, There are limits to how much can go in. You do not have to know the limits, but you do need to know that any money in a health savings account, if you use it for anything other than a healthcare expenditure, let's say you want to go out and buy a boat with that money, there is a 20% penalty plus tax on that non-health expenditure. Now, that's only up to age 65. After 65, the penalty goes away and it's just treated like income. But make sure you know, prior to age 65, 20% plus tax. Next, we have high deductible health plans. All right, this is really very easy for your test. All I need you to know is that your HRAs, your HSAs, and MSAs. MSAs are just medical savings account. All I need you to know is all three of those are linked to a high deductible health plan. So that if you have an employer with a high deductible health plan, you could use the funds from your HRA, your HSA, or your MSA to help meet that deductible. All right, moving on to disability income insurance. This is a very important concept. A disability income policy is only designed to replace lost income. And the reason that's important is that if you have a disability income policy and then you get in a car wreck and you're hospitalized and have to have a bunch of surgery, it will not pay your medical expenses. It is only designed to replace lost income. Let's look at some provisions found in a disability policy. First, presumptive disability is a provision that is found in most disability policies, which specifies conditions that would automatically qualify the insured for their full disability benefits, such as permanent blindness, permanent deafness, or even loss of two limbs. Those are three I've seen on the test that can qualify under presumptive disability. It must be permanent blindness, it must be permanent deafness, or loss of at least two limbs to qualify. Next is recurrent disability. It's another provision. It specifies a period of time during which the recurrence of a prior period disability will just be considered a continuation of that prior period. Now, it has to be two similar disabilities to qualify under recurrent. It can't be two completely separate disabilities. It has to be similar disabilities. All right, next, let's look at some different periods in your disability policy. First, there is the elimination period. All the elimination period is a deductible that's measured in days, not dollars. Your elimination period begins from the onset of your disability. You get to decide how long of an elimination period you would want in your disability policy. It could go anywhere from, say, 0 days up to 1 year. Now, the longer your elimination period, the lower your premium is going to be. Okay, it's kind of like having a high deductible. So the longer the elimination period, the lower the premium. Now, there's another period in a disability policy that the insurance company might put in there called a probationary period. The probationary period is put in there by the insurance company. It's a period of time from when a policy is first issued that must be covered before an illness will be covered. So it's a period of time from when a policy is first issued before an illness would be covered. Another word for illness is loss or certain losses. It's usually between 10 and 30 days. Now, it's put in there by an insurance company to help prevent, and these two words should sound familiar to you, adverse selection. Remember, adverse selection is sick people trying to commit fraud. If you are just buying a disability policy and you're sick because you're sick, well, any claim you might try and file during the probationary period will not be covered. They're going to say that's pre-existing. We are not going to cover. OK, Okay, doesn't mean it'll be covered after the probationary period. They're just going to say, sorry, you're a sick person trying to commit fraud. We ain't covering it. Okay. Now, if you were injured, let's say you fell down and broke your leg, that has nothing to do with the probationary period. It's only illnesses. Okay, so any kind of accident or injury could begin the elimination period. And the last period is the benefit period. Now, the benefit period is when the insurance company is actually replacing your lost income. Now, for your test, it is important that you know that disability benefits will have to be paid at least monthly. That's required by law. So if you'll write that down, disability benefits have to be paid at least monthly. Now, on an individual disability policy, the benefit will always be tax-free to the insured. On a group disability policy, it will depend on who pays the premiums, and we cover that in a taxation video from earlier on. Now, the longer your benefit period, the higher your premium would be, because the longer the insurance company would have to replace your lost income, the more you would pay for that policy. All right, next let's define injury in a disability policy. There's two different definitions. First, there is the accidental bodily injury definition. Accidental bodily injury means the damage to the body must be unexpected and unintended. Or there's the accidental means definition, which means the cause of the accident must be unexpected and unintended. Here's how I need you to know it for your test. Please memorize this. The accidental bodily injury definition, more liberal of the two definitions, provides the broader of the two coverages. Accidental means definition, actually more strict of the two definitions, and it's been outlawed in most states. So that's how I want you to know it for your test. Accidental bodily injury, more liberal of the two definitions, provides the broader coverage. Accidental means more strict of the two definitions, actually been outlawed in most states. All right, now let's look at a disability policy in a business setting. First, there is a business overhead expense policy. This is a type of disability policy purchased by a small business owner. However, if that small business owner became disabled, it would not replace his income. However, it would cover the overhead expenses of his business, his rent, his salaries, his lease agreements, his utilities. It will keep the lights on and the doors open, but it does not replace his income. Now, very important, and we covered it in our taxation video, the premiums are paid by the business owner, and they are deductible as a business expense. However, if that business owner becomes disabled, any benefit received by the business, once again, rent, salaries, utilities, lease agreements, is taxable to the business. So a business overhead expense policy, premiums paid by the owner, deductible as a business expense, benefit received by the business would be taxable. All right, these next two, key person and buy-sell agreement. Okay, first on a buy-sell agreement, or let's first start with a key person policy. Key person, remember, key person is someone that has specialized knowledge, skills, and business contacts. So the business owner could purchase a policy on their key person. So if that key person became disabled, it would provide the business owner funds to hire and train a replacement. Now, the contract is owned by the business. The premium is paid by the business or the business owner. And then the business owner is the beneficiary. And the benefit will always be tax-free. So that means that the premiums that business owner paid are not deductible as a business expense in this case, because the benefit received by that business owner is always tax-free. And then on your buy-sell agreement, just real quick, buy-sell agreement set up by business partners. Remember, how's that business going to change hands if one of those business partners were to die or become disabled in this case? For taxation purposes, premiums paid by the business partners are not deductible as a business expense because any benefit would be received by the other business partner is always tax-free. All right, group disability. Group disability would only replace a percentage of a worker's income. Once again, it's not going to replace all of their income or they'll never go back to work. Now, it could be long-term, short-term. It doesn't really matter, but I do need you to know for your test that in group disability, it's always going to be written on what's called a non-occupational basis only. Non-occupational means anything that happens off the job. It will not cover them if they get hurt on the job, because if they get hurt on the job, they always have workers' compensation to cover them. So group disability is off the job only. Very important for your test that you know that. Next, we have accidental death and dismemberment. Could be a rider to a disability policy or a standalone AD&D policy. But same thing you learned earlier about AD&D. There's the principal sum, which would be paid for an accidental death. And make sure you know for accidental death, death must occur within 90 days of the accident. It would also pay that principal sum for a double dismemberment, permanent blindness, or permanent deafness. Now, there's also the capital sum, which is going to be a percentage of the principal sum, but that's only going to be paid for a loss of one sight in one eye, loss of hearing in one ear, or loss of one limb. So it's only one of something. Other types of policies, there's limited risk policies, which would just cover specific risk. Travel accident policies, and that's an important concept on travel accident. Because if, let's say you are traveling overseas, you're outside of the United States, and you have a disability policy here, but you, let's say you're surfing in Bali, for instance, and you fall off your surfboard and break your leg, any policy you have here will not cover you because overseas travel and residence is excluded from your health policy. So that's why you would have to have a travel accident policy. Then there are special risk policies. So let's say you're a race car driver or a bungee jumper. It would cover just that special risk. Okay, now let's talk about long-term care policies. So long-term care policies provide coverage for individuals who are no longer able to live an independent lifestyle and require living assistance at home or in a nursing facility. When you purchase a long-term care policy, it's like purchasing a disability policy in that there will be an elimination period and a benefit period. Long-term care benefits will be tax-free to the insured unless the benefit exceeds the daily cost of care. So let me give you a quick example on that so you can kind of see how it works. Let's say you have a long-term care policy and it has a benefit of $200 a day. If you got confined to a long-term care facility, let's say you get confined to a facility and the cost of care is $400 a day, you're going to get $200 a day because that's how much you've purchased. Those benefits are tax-free. What if, however, you got confined to a facility and the cost of care was only $100 a day? You're still going to get $200 a day because that's how much you purchased. Now, $100 of it is the cost of care. That's going to be tax-free. However, there's an extra $100 that you received, which is taxed like income. So long-term care benefits are tax-free unless the benefit exceeds the daily cost of care. Now, long-term care policies have exclusions like pre-existing conditions, mental and nervous disorder, treatment covered by Medicare, Medicaid, workers' comp. But there's things that cannot be excluded. That's why I have it here. Things that cannot be excluded would be Alzheimer's, dementia, and Parkinson's. Those cannot be excluded from long-term care policies. Alzheimer's, dementia, and Parkinson's. Now we're going to look at the different levels of care in a long-term care policy. A couple of things to take away from each one of these are who can provide it, and then where can it be provided? And I'll point out each one what you need to know. So the top level of care is called skilled care. Skilled care is care that can only be provided by medical personnel and that care can only be provided in an institutional setting. So it must be medical personnel, and it must be in an institutional setting. The next level down is intermediate care. Intermediate care is also care that can only be provided by medical personnel. However, that care could be either in an institutional setting or in the patient's own home. Intermediate care is for people who need help with any nursing or rehabilitative care. Next level down is custodial care. Now, custodial care is care that can be provided by non-medical personnel. So this is the first one that's non-medical. And that care could either be provided in an institutional setting or in the patient's own home. Now, custodial care is for people who need help with their activities of daily living. They're eating, they're bathing, they're dressing, they're transferring, which means moving from one place to another. That's why it can be non-medical personnel that provide it. Next, we have home health care. Now, home health care is care that's going to be provided by a skilled nursing company or other professional service in one's own home. So it's important that you know it has to be some type of skilled nursing company, or the only other way would be a community-based organization like hospice could provide home health care. 5 minutes ago, if I would have asked you what the word residential meant, what would you have thought? I bet you would have thought it would have meant home. Well, guess what? Residential is not home. When we're talking about residential care, we're talking about a senior that's unable to live an independent lifestyle, and they've had to move out of their home into a residential retirement community where they can get all their needs met. So make sure you know residential does not mean home. Next is adult daycare. This is care for functionally impaired adults on less than a 24-hour basis. Care could include transportation to and from a daycare center. Meals are usually part of the service, and then you get social related activities. So on your test, make sure you just associate adult daycare with less than a 24-hour basis. And lastly, we have respite care. Respite care is designed to give relief to a family caregiver. So that caregiver can take a nap, take a walk, just get out for a while. So respite care can be part of a long-term care contract. All right, moving on to group health insurance. Group health, similar to group life, they underwrite the group as a whole. That is very important on your group underwriting. They do not do individual underwriting. Cost of coverage is based on the average age of the group and the ratio of men to women in the group. Evidence of insurability is usually not required, because once again, they're underwriting the group as a whole. Next, an association could purchase group health insurance for its members, but here's some of the rules for the association. First, the association must have at least 100 members. At least 100 members. At least 100 members. At least 100 members. All right. Now, what do you think is important about an association? You would be correct if you said at least 100 members. Now, there's other rules. They have to have a constitution, bylaws, and hold annual meetings. But I promise you, on your test, where they will try and trick you is the at least 100 members. Now, remember, with your group health, you as an employee do not own the plan. It's owned by the company. So the employer gets a master policy. Employees do not get a policy. What you do get are certificates of insurance. That's really important for your test, by the way. Now, if you leave your employer, you have a conversion privilege. You have 31 days to convert without proof of insurability to an individual plan. Now, if you do have pre-existing conditions and you want to convert, you cannot be declined, okay, because you're doing it without evidence of insurability. However, the insurer can evaluate you so that if you do have pre-existing conditions, two things could happen. Number one, you could get lesser benefits than what you had in the group plan. And number two, you could get rated up, paying a higher premium. Okay, so that is the conversion privilege. Going to an individual plan without evidence of insurability within 31 days, but you could get rated up and get lesser benefits. Now, let's look at how that conversion privilege differs from COBRA. COBRA, which is the Consolidated Omnibus Budget Reconciliation Act of 1985, that is federal legislation. Now, there's a lot of numbers here in COBRA that I need you to know. First, COBRA applies to employers with 20 or more employees to extend group health coverage to terminate employees and their families after a qualifying event. Qualifying events under COBRA are voluntary termination of employment, termination of employment for reasons other than gross misconduct, such as company downsizing, or employment status change from full-time to part-time. So those are the qualifying events under COBRA. For any of these qualifying events, the employee has 60 days to exercise their extension to COBRA, and then it must provide coverage for up to 18 months. Now, the maximum time period for COBRA is 36 months, but it is specific to death of the employee, then the family can stay on COBRA for up to 36 months. Divorce, then the old ex can stay on COBRA for up to 36 months. Or in states that actually have legal separation, the legally separated spouse can stay on COBRA for up to 36 months. Now remember, with COBRA, you are staying on the group plan. So the employer is going to be collecting the premium. The employer can only charge an extra 2% to cover administrative costs over whatever the total premium was before in the group plan. So let's take a look at that. Let's say you're the employee and you've been paying $250 a month for your health coverage. Pretty affordable. What you don't know is behind the scenes, your employer has been paying $750 a month, okay, for a total of $1,000 a month. You have a qualifying event. You want to get on COBRA. You get a letter from the insurance company that says, welcome to COBRA. Your new monthly premium will be $1,020 a month. And you're like, how in the Hades did it go from $250 up to $1,020? Well, it's whatever you were paying. Now the employer ain't going to pick up his part anymore. You're going to have to pay that for a total of $1,000 a month. Add an extra 2%. That's how you get to $1,020. Okay. And lastly, in this chapter, some limited benefit plans. Get back to kind of our AFLAC type policies. They're limited to whatever benefits they say they will provide. First would be like a dread disease plan, like a cancer policy or a heart disease policy. It would only cover that specific dread disease. There are critical illness plans, which would pay a lump sum for the diagnosis and survival of a critical illness. Hospital indemnity plans, that brings us back to our basic hospital expense policy where it paid a specific dollar amount per day for your room and board while you're confined to the hospital, but it had a limited number of days it would pay. There's short-term medical plans, which could cover you for up to 11 months after you leave an employer. Accident-only plans obviously would only cover accidents. Then you have dental, covering dental, and vision, covering vision. But you do need to know on both of these that because of the Affordable Care Act, pediatric dental must be covered under all dental plans, and pediatric vision must be covered under all vision plans. All right, that is your types of health policies. Now go to your simulator and begin practicing.